As I concluded on the last one, it's clear that we all have an effect on one another, and as we're now going to talk about external matters and our actions to help one another and assist one another, it's very appropriate that we draw closer together so we can hear and talk much better. Can you hear? Me? I'm not going to talk. Okay, well, I'll hand you over now to Barbara.
We obviously got technical problems, so I'm not quite sure how this is going to pan out, because if we really can't hear the DVD, which is our sort of example,
we're a bit stuck, but
we'll come to that when we get to it. Okay. The title is Discipleship, as you can see. Back in August, Anna and I spent a week with Duncan and Cindy in Latvia, and we were privileged to witness the baptism of several people. This led to discussions about how to help new converts to grow as Christians, or in other words, how to disciple them. And we realised that many of them live a long way from the support of other believers, so it is hard to meet their spiritual needs. Anyway, the more we thought about this, the more we realised that how to support spiritual growth isn't just a problem in the mission field. It's a matter of concern throughout the community as a whole. We all understand how to meet our physical needs, but the fact is we're all spiritual beings made in the image of God, and we are designed to develop spiritually so that we can bring glory to God and shine his love to those around us. There is a danger that emphasis on the importance of baptism can give the wrong impression that baptism is an end in itself, our ticket to the kingdom. And so after baptism, it's just a case of marking time until Jesus returns, rather than it being the beginning of a new life, a new relationship with God and Jesus. It's quite easy to look the part of a Christian, reading the Bible, going to meetings, saying and doing the right things, and even praying, without any of it actually transforming us inwardly. To quote Christine Dillon in her book, One-to-One Discipleship.
Yeah. Lack of depth and maturity in the worldwide church is a major problem. Very few Christians really know their Bibles well or can apply the word to their daily lives. Few really live as salt and light in a dark world. Most make little impact for the kingdom or know how to share their faith simply and in such a way that people want to listen. Sadly, many are not even aware that their Christian lives could be any different, and so they live frustrated lives.
You may be thinking, but Christadelphians have depth and maturity, and they know their Bibles well. But what about the rest of the quote? Are new converts aware that their Christian lives could be any different? Are we? And yet the Bible is full of verses about the importance of spiritual growth and personal transformation now as our response to God's grace. Have a look at this. That's a frustrated Christian. Sorry. Have a look at this verse in Romans.
I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will.
The Bible makes it clear that our personal transformation is an ongoing process, not a one-off event at baptism, or even something solely confined to the future age. Paul writes,
we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory.
The Bible writers took the concept of spiritual growth extremely seriously. Look at Paul in this passage.
We proclaim Christ, admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom, so that we may bring people up to their full maturity in Christ. To this end, I labour, struggling with all his energy, which so powerfully works in me.
Paul clearly sees it as his God-given duty to nurture his fellow Christians towards spiritual maturity. But notice that it is God working in him. To this end I labour, struggling with all his energy, which so powerfully works in me. And we should take it just as seriously. Look at Jesus' final words before he ascended to heaven.
Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age.
Exhortations at the breaking of bread and Bible class talks can go so far, but the one-size-fits-all approach fails to meet everyone's needs. Often, there is little life application, so there's no follow-up required during the week, and there's no need for accountability. So, as a result, we can't really expect to grow spiritually. We've talked to a cross-section of our community ranging from the seeker to the seasoned Christian and found that many are looking for something more on a spiritual level because, as Christ's disciples, we should be undergoing a lifetime process of having our character transformed and moulded to Jesus' will.
And that's where we got that quote.
That's the quote from John Stott. But what could we be doing as a community to promote this? And this is where I hand over to Anna, and she tells you about her researches.
Well, I've sort of been thinking about this whole subject for quite a long time, and it was interesting when we went out to Latvia, and Duncan approached us and said, "We need to do something about discipling converts." And I thought, "Wow, I've been thinking about this." And I'd already done quite a bit of research, and sort of inspired me to go away and do some more research. So I've trawled through kind of loads of books and things. Just got a little stash here. And it's been really fascinating, and it's kind of opened up whole vistas of things that I've never even thought of before. And I just thought, whoa, I've just had such a kind of blinkered view of life and Christianity and stuff. And it just made me think, we need to get serious about this, and we need to, you know, we need to be meeting together and discussing stuff and reading and praying together. I thought, you know, a lot of the things we do in the meeting, it's like this, you're sort of sitting and listening to a talk, and often the best bits I find are the discussions at the end when we're all kind of, you know, working through things and sort of getting our heads around things. Because you can go to as many meetings as you like and sit there and it can just go whoosh. Or it might even go in and then just go out the other side, you know, and it makes no difference in your life. And it's only when you actually sit down and discuss together and you know, challenge each other and say, "Are you sure that's what it says?" And then you find other verses, and you know, and I think that is when you really start to grow, because you actually take it in and it changes you. So I think the first thing that came out of this was just the importance really of getting together in small groups and working through stuff and reading and praying and things. So small group, I think, is one way forward. I think another thing is we have to be non-judgmental. It's got to be kind of, what's the word? Yeah, kind of ethos of, you know, it's okay to ask questions. Because a lot of the time I feel I can't ask that question because it's, you know, so obvious. Or
think aloud, isn't it? Yeah. Just think things through, and you might come back
full circle.
Yeah.
But so many times I've just thought I can't even go there because we know what we believe about that, so just don't even talk about it. So, yeah, that kind of open acceptance kind of thing. And also the idea of asking God to come in and work in you as well. But it's not us doing all the work, like you were saying. It's actually God coming in and helping us. So, this leads on to... I think that... I've tried out various different courses. I've read through various different discipleship courses. And this is one that I particularly like. It's called Discipleship Explored. Because it actually goes through...
Let's go on to the next slide.
There we go. It's sort of a structured approach, because I think lots of time, you know, you go to Bible class and one week the subject might be love, and the next week it might be the temple, and the next week it might be, you know, whatever, forgiveness, and the next week it might be Beelzebub. I don't know, they're all quite random subjects, and there's no sort of follow through. So this is really, it's a progressive course, you know, and it goes all through, I think it's about 8 weeks, this. And it gives, this one particular one's based on the book of Philippians, and there's a sort of format every week that kind of takes you through a process. So it starts off with some questions to get you thinking. So before you even do anything else, you just sort of start discussing. Then you read a passage from Philippians, so it's just working through the book of Philippians. Then there's a short video presentation, and we'd like to show you a bit in a minute, but we're having problems with the sound, so we'll see. Then there's some follow-up questions from that, so it's all discussing, it's all, you know, working through stuff. And then there's questions about how you're actually going to put it into practice in the week. And there's something that I particularly like. At the end of each section, there's a kind of thing for every day. So every day there's something to read about and pray about. So it goes through the whole week. It's not just kind of a once-a-week thing and then go away and forget about it. And then there's also ideas for prayer. So it's just a really... I just really like the concept, anyway. You may disagree, but... now, how do I do this? So we'll just watch one of the... or try and watch one of the episodes... And let me know if you can't hear, and we'll kind of give up. What about you playing? Yeah. Not that I'm being defeatist. Oh dear. Any ideas?
It was there before.
have I pressed play already? Shall I try to?
No. It's done. See if it changes its mind. No.
Right. Shall I eject?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not my memory stick. Play again? I did that.
Well, you're on your CD, isn't it? Try taking it out.
Can it?
So I think it's a good plan to start.
Yeah, if I get out.
And it should sort of autoplay, shouldn't it, when you push it in? Because it did before. Give it time.
Often it's only when you look back at things afterwards that you...
Oh, you've got a sound control there as well.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got the actual laptop itself.
Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life, in order that I may boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labour for nothing. But even if I am being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him as soon as I see how things go with me. And I am confident in the Lord that I myself will come soon. But I think it is necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you, and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I'm all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. Welcome him in the Lord with great joy, and honor men like him, because he almost died for the work of Christ, risking his life to make up for the help you could not give me.
What do you think is more important, to tell people the gospel or live a godly life among them? My friend Robert had been working at an engineering firm for 5 years, and at his leaving party, one of his colleagues stood up and said, "Rob, we all agree that you're the most likable person we've ever worked with. You've got such integrity and patience." And then he said something that made Robert, as a Christian, feel like he'd missed a 5-year-long opportunity. He said, "We were trying to work out what it was that makes you so special. We decided you must be a Buddhist." You another guy who worked for a travel company. He did tell his colleagues that he was a Christian, but they all knew that along with everyone else in the office, he cheated on his expenses. So what do you think is more important, to tell people the gospel or live a godly life among them?
Paul says that as Christians, we should shine like stars in the universe. We do that, he says, by holding out the word of life. In other words, by telling people the gospel, telling them about Jesus Christ. "I am the light of the world," said Jesus. "Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life."
So shining like stars is about telling people the gospel. But it's not just about that. It's about living the gospel too.
Stars stand out from the darkness around them. And that's the way Christians should be, standing out from the world we live in. The gospel should shine from every part of our lives, not just what we say.
That's why Paul says, do everything without complaining or arguing. The Philippian Christians couldn't stand out from the world around them if they were complaining and arguing just like everyone else. And things haven't changed much. We love to complain and argue, especially us British. The top British tour operators recently did a survey to see if people were enjoying their vacations. One person actually wrote, "No one told us there'd be fish in the sea. The children were startled." Another person complained that there wasn't any air conditioning outside. And another person complained, "It took us 9 hours to fly to Jamaica from England. It only took the Americans 3. We love to grumble and whine and nitpick. And like the Israelites in the desert, as well as grumbling against each other, we can easily start grumbling against our leaders and grumbling against God. But Christians are not to be like that, says Paul.
If we are like that, then we're not shining like stars, we're disappearing like black holes. And our friends, our family, our work colleagues are not going to need a telescope to see that Jesus doesn't seem to be making a difference in our lives. But if we shine like stars, if we stand out in the right way, then the gospel shines too. And here's the equation that lies behind all this. Paul says, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose.
Did you see those two things together? Verse 12, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. In other words, you work. Verse 13, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. In other words, God works. Now, this isn't a miscalculation. Paul meant to write exactly what he wrote.
When you look at things front on, from your perspective, you are the one making the decisions, fighting sin, living for Christ, looking to the interests of others, contending for the gospel. But all the time you're doing that, it's actually God who is working in you and through you to make it all happen. And often it's only when you look back at things afterwards that you can clearly see, that was God working in me to change my will and give me the desire to act according to his good purpose.
And that is no small thing. The fact that God himself is actually at work in you as a Christian should motivate you to work out your salvation with what Paul calls fear and trembling. There's an awe and a reverence we should feel towards God that should make us very serious about obeying him. Now, when we hear Paul saying, work out your salvation, it's vital we don't hear him saying, work for your salvation. That single word makes all the difference, because you can't work for your salvation. Christ already has. Our salvation does not depend on our work at all. It depends entirely on Jesus' finished work on the cross. People's lives are ruined, sometimes eternally, when they misunderstand that. So let me say it again. You cannot work for your salvation. Christ already has. However, once we are saved, then our salvation will begin to work itself out in lots of ways. It will become visible in every area of our lives. It'll work itself out in our relationships, at our place of work, in the way we talk, in the way we spend our money and our time. And that's what Paul means by work out your salvation.
As you obey Christ, your salvation works itself out, becomes visible in your life. It's you working out all the implications of what you believe.
And notice Paul says, as you have obeyed not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence. It's so easy for us to start leading double lives. Instinctively, we're on our best behavior when we're in church or with Christian friends, but what about in their absence? How good are we at obeying Christ during the week when we're away from church?
How we live shows the world whether Jesus really matters. How we live shows whether the gospel we hold out really makes a difference.
Paul ends this part of his letter by giving us two glowing examples of people who are working out their salvation and shining like stars. Timothy and Epaphroditus both care deeply about the well-being of others, even at the expense of their own, and both of them work hard for the gospel without complaining and arguing. Paul describes Timothy as serving with him in the work of the gospel, and Epaphroditus as his fellow worker and fellow soldier. In fact, Epaphroditus had taken a journey of many hundreds of miles over many weeks just so that he could take care of Paul's needs. Apparently, he almost died for the work of Christ, and yet he longs to make the return journey back to Philippi with Paul's letter. Had Epaphroditus not worked out his salvation like this, our Bibles would be minus a book.
So when people look at us during the week, what do they see? Do they see people eager to tell others the gospel and transparently living a godly life among them? Do they see people like Timothy, people like Epaphroditus, who even now, as we read about them 2,000 years on, shine like stars in the universe?
Has anyone got any comments on that, or anything that kind of, like, stuck out? Or anything you didn't like? Very listenable, yeah.
I think it's a little phrase I have, which I've taught by an old brother. I was trying to do a lot of preaching, at least I thought, telling people about his general believers. And he said to me, I'd like to speak to you, Marcus. And so, Jesus, I went to him, but I want to tell you a lesson. The truth is not taught. It is caught. And I argued with him, and I said, I don't think that's true. Actually, I believe it is the very truth that it's infectious, if I can call it. And that's got to radiate from us. It's no good saying, we don't believe the point of legal affinity, you want to look at this verse and that verse. I think the first thing is you've got to break those barriers down and be friendly.
It's funny you should say that, because I got a text from someone recently, and he said something like, your enthusiasm is infectious. And it is, it's like, so it is something that's caught.
Very interesting discussion between Neville Smart and Harry Tennant there, where they were basically interviewing each other. And Neville Smart, who'd come from outside the community, was asked by Harry, well, what was it that attracted you to the Christadelphians? Was it the doctrines? Was it the prophecy? Was it the promise of eternal life? He said, no, it was the people.
I was going to say.
Would that were all with you? Sorry. I think our exhortations on Sunday mornings or afternoons ought to have. I know they should lead us to the end and to the sacrifice of Christ, but I think they should also be more positive in helping us to think about our own lives and how we live them, and use scriptures in that way to guide us into the correct way of living. So we shine like stars.
Because I would always question.
Life is not perfect by any means. Don't ask Ruth if she'll take all the skeletons out of the cupboard.
I'd almost question, if the exhortation isn't leading us to change our lives in some way, is it serving any purpose? Maybe that's a bit going too far. Yes.
So, practically, how do we suggest that we try to help these people we baptise to be grow in the truth and in the Lord? Suggesting we give them this movie, this video, what is it, this DVD or whatever to play. Actually, not quite suggesting that. One thing, it's in English. Another thing, a lot of people don't have DVD player, etc.
This is what we.
What's happened is that. I don't know why, but God has led us to the situation where, as we said last night, thousands, a few thousand people baptized in the, let's say, isolation, semi-isolation all over the world. What can we do to help those people to grow in Christ? The baptism is one thing. What can we do? Sure, we sell them DVDs, if they can play DVDs and they can, and they know English, but beyond that, what can we do practically? I mean, I don't have the answers.
Right, Alexis. Well, we thought if you've kind of got to do it with yourselves first, haven't you, to sort of, before you can do it to others, as it were. So we thought these were a good thing to do in a little group on your own, to work through it, and then basically you kind of write your own, as it were. And if they've not got DVD players and things, it will have to be just by.
What we wanted to do next was actually kind of brainstorm what sort of areas need to be covered. Because I don't know what you thought about that DVD, but I just thought the concept of the working out your salvation, for it's God that works in you, is just a concept that I've never heard. Well, I don't know, maybe I've missed it, but it's not something that we really discussed.
Yeah, talking to some Christadelphians, definitely, they fear the judgment, and they are definitely riddled with guilt, and they're trying to undo the things they've done in their lives, and they're just very unhappy. And so I think, well, they know about grace, they know all the community chapter and verse, they know their Bibles, but somehow it hasn't impacted on them, they're not believing it for themselves, and that's what I think is sad.
Can I just ask, is that what you talk about, people in isolation?
No.
People in, yes.
And they're sitting through all the exhortations and they're sitting through all the classes, but it isn't impacting on them somehow. And
it's sort of an academic exercise.
So I think there is a need for really, you might see it as going back to basics, I don't know how you describe it, but to actually go through this sort of thing. To try and help people?
For myself, I have an aims and objectives in my life, which consists of about 22 items, and I try and build that. So if I'm faced with a situation, I have what should be my answer. Now, you may not have lived up to that answer, but at least you know where you should be. So I tend to feel that we should all have, like any good company, our aims and objectives, and a list of things that, you know, we have decided we should try and do in our lives.
Your mission statement.
Yeah, mission statement. Yeah. Statement of faith.
But that has connotations, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think part of the problem is the formality of your standard Bible class and the way meetings are held? Because in our meeting, which is very small, we do have, every meeting is a discussion group, really.
I'm sure this is a generalisation, and we realise that.
I think that that is very, very much part of the problem,
yeah,
the formality and the lack of discussion.
We think that the sort of the small house group idea is a very helpful one, because A, you get to know each other very well, and it's a much freer forum.
People then feel they can contribute and put forward their problems.
And also, they put forward their problems, but they don't even know they've got the problems sometimes. You know, if they're forever going back over a past sin and sort of feeling guilty about it, and it's really colouring their life, they don't quite see what the problem is. You might be able to see it. It's very difficult to... on a Sunday afternoon. This is a problem, which we...
Interestingly, just 2 days ago, I went round to a friend's house, and she's not Christian, but we just had the most incredible...
She's a seeker, but
I would suggest you don't even have yourself to meet with other Christians if there aren't any. I mean, I think there must be I suppose there are places in the world where you're the only Christian. But even if there isn't anyone else, you can still talk to people about the basic questions of life. You know,
the needs of a human being, and
we just talked about so many things. And I learned such a lot. She learned such a lot. And it was so maybe that's one way, just to kind of meet with other people and just talk about the big questions of life.
Certainly in our development as an ecclesia, we have very fast come to the conclusion that to get real fellowship you need to take it outside of Sunday. And that's whether that's pastoral house groups, whether that's social activities. The biggest benefit our ecclesia has been from the social calendar. And actually organising things outside of Sunday where you get to know your brothers and sisters in a social class,
but if you're doing
that activity in a Christian context. And then, as you say, the biggest problem then is how do you show someone how to, how does someone grow their life outside of Sunday if they don't even have a Sunday in the first place? Because you're trying to, what my take on this is that to get that surety that you're looking for in discipleship, you're learning how to live your life as a Christian in your ordinary everyday life. Best way to learn that is with other people, because automatically when you get two people together, your mindset, two Christian people together, your mindset about how you go about anything is completely different. Suddenly you're thinking, well, we prayed before we have this meal. There's something completely different, I think, going on there, and that makes it hard.
What you thought there is in Colossians about spiritual maturity, what that really is. Spiritual maturity, because I think a lot of people in isolation, say a lot of people are made in isolation or far more spiritually mature, and a lot of people are in and I would say that just because the spiritual mind, the way they conduct their lives, that's no judgment to me, it's just knowing that they live their life in isolation, because the Bible is a big thing, they preach to those around about them. And when you look at where we live lives in Ephesians, larger Ephesians particularly, it's very much a tender meeting and going home basis. You don't really know very easily the other brothers and sisters necessarily that well in your own meeting that you're seeing on a daily basis. So I'm just wondering what this help is that we're looking for. You don't think that your experiences and what
hell dreams. I know there's probably different themes here. One is the practical hell, practical needs for those that are out there. And then there's the spiritual hell, there's educational needs for teaching them more about the gospel. I guess it, by far there's probably a lot more practical help that's required in looking after our brothers and sisters worldwide, as well as spreading the gospel.
Yeah, I would undoubtedly that there's practical need required, but in this context, we've got to do something for them after their baptism. I mean, there's no doubt, I mean, it's critical. They go through whatever they go through, the Bible Basics or Correspondence course when they're coming up with baptism, and I just wonder if we need something beyond that so that they're studying in a structured sort of way. After their baptism. It could be a DVD, can be another book.
It sounds like it's got to be written from what you said.
Yeah.
I've got
personal correspondence.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Writing letters.
It's the idea of it.
So you want to get a dialogue, don't you, I suppose?
Maybe. But maybe you don't speak the language. But again, you've got a language problem. Yeah. So maybe assigning people to, say, tutors.
A fellow disciple.
So, yeah, a fellow disciple.
Because obviously you can learn from them. It's not a one-way street, is it? They're going to give you food as well as you give them. But it is the language barrier.
And I guess it depends how they came to the truth in the first place. Mm. If they came through the internet, then you can use the internet helping them further their...
And actually, yeah.
If it was through a correspondence course, that's probably a correspondence course. If it's through another brother or sister, then try to encourage that brother or sister to take them.
Just listening to Paul as he writes on a really personal basis, doesn't he? He knows his brothers and sisters, and perhaps probably that's one of the key, developing a relationship with these people. So, breaking into particularly early breaking down into smaller groups, you can take personal care of the group of people and develop a relationship with them because they're mentally, they're getting to know that are mentally.
Yeah. I've been reading this book called One to One Discipleship, that's where one of the quotes came from. And it's quite fascinating because this is literally one person to one person. And you can sort of tailor it exactly to that person's needs. Whereas in a group, you're obviously, there's lots of different needs coming in, which is great. You can all learn from each other, but with the one-to-one, which is kind of what would be happening with these people in isolation, you can actually find out where what their experiences so far, where they've come from, and you can tailor it to them and find out what their particular spiritual needs are. Are they struggling with some temptation or whatever that needs to be sort of worked through? Can I just say,
I think you touched on something very fundamental in terms of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about it last night, Steve, had a very favour last night. But what he didn't raise was forgiving yourself.
Yes.
And I think come up with a fundamental issue, what if you find it hard to forgive themselves? Until you're able to forgive yourself and truly believe in the grace of God, how can you go out and preach to other people and give them and show them the grace?
You've got nothing to offer.
You've got to start at best, first of all.
But you're only going to find that out about somebody, aren't you? That they've got that.
Yeah, and that means that our own ecclesias or groups or whatever, you've got to work this out between yourselves to be able to go out and preach effectively, is my belief. And when you've done that, you can go out and forgive other people. You can't forgive a brother or sister you're sat with on the Sunday or whatever. You're not equipped to go out and deal with far greater problems you're going to see than the rest of the world.
But this came out of that DVD, didn't it, where the distinction was made between the concept of working out your salvation in the way I've always thought of it, as if it was something that gradually grew, to realising that actually salvation is something you've been given, and all these things work out of it.
Yes.
That is just so, that turns the whole thing on its head. Salvation is something we have, Absolute forgiveness is what grace has provided for us. That's where we are. That's where we want all the other people to be. And that's how we're going to, how it's going to work out for us. We're living out of that.
And I think a lot of, or certainly for a lot of my life, I've just been living,
frustrated life, because you can never do it.
That's right. Because in that sense, forgiving yourself, that's not an issue. God's done that.
I think a great weight falls off your shoulders when you realise actually it's God working in you and not you just batting on your own many little times.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
We do start from a certain disadvantage here. The community does not have a good central book with clear teaching on this very point.
Mm. Here you go, Duncan.
But we have, it's called the Bible.
But a particular emphasis put on this has always been to put too much emphasis on our effort, our study, our
working for yourself.
Are we going to be? I mean, Harry Whittaker in one of his books asked a very good question. Answer this question: yes or no. Will you be in the kingdom?
Yes.
Yes.
And it's, you put that question, and you know the normal answer is going to be yes, but.
I like the question, are you a sinner or a saint?
And I think it is like you, Anna, I've had difficulty with this concept of grace. I'm satisfied that actually I learned grace from outside the community. I'm delighted to come back in here and find that, you know, there are others who know it as well, but I didn't get systematic teaching on grace from within the community. That's awfully sad, and I think it puts us at a disadvantage. And I think in taking this subject forward, they're putting it into practical things. We've got to start off on that passage from Philippians 2, which is central, because it's a famous Christadelphian partial quotation. Work out your salvation clear and trembling. You be amazed how many people cannot complete that sentence.
I thought I'll see if there's any kind of discipleship Christadelphian course. So I don't know if any of you found anything. You know, like a post-baptism report. And because we do lots of, like, you know, first principles and all that fairly academic stuff, but not much on how to live. And I found one on the book of Philippians, and having worked through this course, or partially worked through it, I thought, oh, good, let's see how it tallies up. And I went straight to that passage, and it just quoted the first bit. And I was like, so I don't know if anyone else has found any other sort of course similar to that, but is already existing.
It's obviously a need.
So,
for the next 2 minutes, just knock up a course.
Yeah. Shall I just show you the list?
We've kind of put together a list of what we thought
areas that could do with being covered. And you might agree or disagree, and you might want to add some other things. Oh, hang on, forget that. Sorry, okay. So prayer, we just need to pray more together for a start, and learn what prayer really is. And repentance, forgiveness of yourself. Temptation, I just think that's a massive issue that we don't really cover. Oh, in my experience, anyway. Loving God, what it really means to love God, our neighbour, ourselves.
Changes in attitude.
Yeah.
We really mean changes in attitude.
Mm. And I think we should say produced by the fruit of the Spirit. Not producing the fruit of the Spirit. I don't think we can produce the fruit of the Spirit. It's the fruit of the Spirit.
The Spirit, which has to grow.
Yeah.
Semantics.
Trusting God, like, so taking scriptures and actually believing them, not kind of looking at them and thinking, well, that's not true in my life, so it's obviously irrelevant nowadays.
And knowing God.
Identity in Christ now, what has Christ actually done for us and how do we live that out? And then the whole being prepared to give an answer, so, you know, being prepared to share the gospel and answer people's tricky questions about the deep questions about death.
The views of the first prayer,
in the Maidenhead region to which I belong, one Sunday, with a view to the first topic, prayer, in the Maidenhead region to which I belong, once a month, half an hour before the Sunday morning service, we have a prayer meeting, which is very helpful. A lot of people, half a dozen go to it, 6 or 8, sometimes more. And we also have a prayer cascade, so if anybody needs help or a prayer, through the meeting, it starts off with one or two members who then ring up other members, and it cascades through the meeting, so that prayer is open then to people. And I think that's very helpful. It means that the belief in and the power of prayer is very prevalent in the meeting to which I belong.
I think we tend to live very compartmentalised lives, and what we've got to try to do is to break down the barriers between us so that we can come together and help one another in frank discussion with one another, with help of one another.
I think that's exactly the problem. How do you talk about science? I belong to a very large meeting and listen to all of them. I've been active in this church. So I belong to a small cathedral. We have a small Bible class. And we're not novices. You know, I'm not being disrespectful. There are many of the brethren there. Well, we only have about 10 in our Bible class, something like that. And we freely and openly discuss things. And we accept each other. Now, I've changed my mind considerably. Been in the church about 50 years, but in the last 5 or 6 years since I've been this morning, I've changed my views on a lot of things because we discussed it. And I think the thing is that we have to each esteem others better than ourselves to be. But the problem with Christadelphians is that they are too dogmatic. And Lippy did a good description of all the Christadelphians. The one phrase I can remember, he said that they were a cantankerous lot. And I think in many cases that that is true. You can't discuss anything openly with many Christadelphians because they are too set in their view. And that is one of our problems. Having a discussion group, it depends who you're hanging in with. And people have got to have the right frame of mind to actually change their views if necessary.
And getting back to what you were saying, Peter, I think we need to pray for the community that people's minds will be opened and then so that we can. Because I just think there's brick walls in a lot of places and we need to break them down.
Often you just don't know what people do think. You don't know, you know, we all sit there thinking, well, we more or less believe the same thing, but unless you get into these small groups, you don't actually know what people do think about things. And maybe misconceptions they've got.
But also there's a lot of fear in expressing your thoughts.
Well, that's why, isn't it?
Or ridiculed, or this isn't the standard way of believing.
Yeah. We had a question evening. We had a question evening once at the meeting, and we put them in anonymously. And I had a genuine question, which I put in, and the president got it out and said, well, I sincerely hope this isn't a baptised believer that's written this. That's a real, you know, good sort of open and...
Let's just judge this question before we leave. <that one. laughs>
Good open forum, isn't it?
Anyway.
Would that have been from somebody that wasn't, you know, they were sort of wavering a bit, it'd be enough to just put them off into it. So you do have to be much more open.
So I don't know if we really answered your question. I think we need to write a...
We'll need to learn Latvian for start, I think.
The bigger general thing is this working out our salvation. We work it out with other people. And we are all daily in contact with other people. We're just trying to get ourselves to work out that salvation with the world around us. How we should try and do that. The option of discussing the spiritual matters is far less than the opportunity of working out our salvation in a practical sense.
Mm-hmm. Brothers and sisters, there's a sound of coffee cups. Yes. I'll just say, put my £10 penny with it. It seems that there are big needs in the brotherhood and in the environs of the whole world. And it's quite clear, two-way is the answer. When there are needs out there, and one of the ways to address a need is to get them to help you to help them. You see what I mean? Mm. To call on the abilities of other people, not to say, oh, they're terrible problems, what can we do for them? There's often a lot more that will find you back if you go and look for it. Because everyone has far more abilities than you can really realise. You can do things. They're all human beings and abilities and abilities. Anyway, we're going to sing about taking courage. Musicians, can you play this? 3, 5, 7. Always put yourself in the book. Take courage, my brother, and be not faint-hearted. Let none of your sorrows or trials be. But reach forth your hand and remember your brother. Forget all your troubles in meeting his needs. 3, 5, 7. No, we'll conclude.